The day is long past when this phrase, national security, was restricted to what is required in actual war. As everyone knows, it has been, since World War II under FDR, a constantly widening cloak or umbrella for governmental actions of every conceivable degree of power, stealth, and cunning by an ever-expanding core of government officials. As we now know in detail, the utilization of the FBI and other paramilitary agencies by presidents and other high executive department officers for the purposes of eavesdropping, electronic bugging, and similarly intimate penetrations of individual privacy goes straight back to FDR, and the practice has only intensified and widened ever since. Naturally, all such royalist invasions have been justified, right down to Watergate, under the name of national security. The record is clear and detailed that national security cover-up has been a practice of each of the presidents since FDR. Judge Andrew Napolitano recently asked, "Why should government agents spy on us? They work for us. How about we spy on them? On cops, when they arrest and interrogate people or contemplate suspending freedom. On prosecutors, when they decide whom to prosecute and what evidence to use. On judges, when they rationalize away our guaranteed rights. And on members of Congress, whenever they meet with a lobbyist, mark up a piece of legislation, or conspire to assault our liberties or our pocketbooks." For a patriotic American, there is nothing radical about this attitude at all. This is how the Founding Fathers thought. If our critics want to repudiate the Founding Fathers, let them go ahead and do it. If they won't be honest enough to do so, they should at least refrain from condemning those of us who still believe in the wisdom they left for posterity. Much more is at stake here than privacy violations or unconstitutional searches, important and dangerous as those are. For example, the president has made clear in one of his signing statements that he retains the power to engage in torture regardless of congressional statutes to the contrary. Defense Department memoranda say the same thing. First of all, legal issues aside, the American people and government should never abide the use of torture by our military or intelligence agencies. A decent society never accepts or justifies torture. It dehumanizes both torturer and victim, yet seldom produces reliable intelligence. Torture by rogue American troops or agents puts all Americans at risk, especially our rank-and-file soldiers stationed in dozens of dangerous places around the globe. It is not difficult to imagine American soldiers or travelers being taken hostage and tortured as some kind of sick retaliation for Abu Ghraib. Beyond that is the threat posed by unchecked executive power. Executive branch lawyers claim that the president's commander-in-chief powers override federal laws prohibiting torture, but the argument for extraordinary wartime executive powers has been made time and again, always with bad results and the loss of our liberties. War has been used by presidents to excuse the imprisonment of American citizens of Japanese descent, to silence speech, to suspend habeas corpus, and even to control entire private industries. That's why it is precisely during times of relative crisis that we should adhere most closely to the Constitution, not abandon it. The founders were especially concerned about the consolidation of power during times of war and national emergencies. War does not justify the suspension of torture laws any more than it justifies the suspension of murder laws, the suspension of due process, or the suspension of the Second Amendment. The hallowed right of habeas corpus has also been a casualty of the War on Terror. The Military Commissions Act of 2006 gives the president the power to detain people indefinitely and to deny the accused any real opportunity to answer the charges against them. It is anti-American at its core. The name of the act can give the misleading impression that anyone targeted under it can at least bring his case before a military commission. This is not so. If the president wants to punish an accused enemy combatant, he may bring him before such a commission. But he need not, and if he'd rather that the person remain in prison forever, he is free to adopt that course instead. This legislation gave legal backing to practices in which the administration had already been engaged. Ali Salah Kalah Al-Mari, a citizen of Qatar, married with 5 children, was living in America legally in 2001 when he was charged with making false statements in connection with the investigation of 9/11. He was slated to be tried in July 2003. Whatever the merits of the case against him, what happened next is an astonishing departure from American principles and tradition.